When I got back, I could hear Howard and Bugler laughing down by the quarters. I put my hoe down and cut across the side yard to get to you. The shade moved, so by the time I got back, the sun was shining right on you, right in your face. But you wasn't woke at all, still asleep. I wanted to pick you up in my arms, and I wanted to look at you sleeping, too. Didn't know which. You had the sweetest face. Yonder, not far, was a grape arbor Mr. Garner made. Always full of big plans, he wanted to make his own wine to get drunk off. Never did get more than a kettle of jelly from it. I don't think the soil was right for grapes. Your daddy believed it was the rain, not the soil. Sixo said it was bugs. The grapes so little and tight, sour as vinegar, too. But there was a little table in there, so I picked up your basket and carried you over to the grape arbor, cool in there and shady. I set you down on the little table and figured if I got a piece of muslin, the bugs and things wouldn't get to you. And if Mrs. Garner didn't need me right there in the kitchen, I could get a chair and you and me could sit out there while I did the vegetables. I headed for the back door to get the clean muslin we kept in the kitchen press. The grass felt good on my feet. I got near the door and I heard voices. School teacher made his pupils sit and learn books for a spell every afternoon. If it was nice enough weather, they'd sit on the side porch, all three of them. He'd talk and they'd write. Or he would read and they would write down what he said. I never told nobody this. Not your pap, not nobody. I almost told Mrs. Garner, but she was so weak then and getting weaker. This is the first time I'm telling it, and I'm telling it to you because it might help explain something to you, although I know you don't need me to do it, to tell it or even think over it. You don't have to listen either if you don't want to. But I couldn't help listening to what I heard that day. He was talking to his pupils, and I heard him say, "Which one are you doing?" And one of the boys said, "Setha." That's when I stopped, because I heard my name. And then I took a few steps to where I could see what they was doing. School teacher was standing over one of them, with one hand behind his back. He licked a forefinger a couple of times and turned a few pages. Slow. I was about to turn around and keep on my way to where the muslin was when I heard him say, "No, no, that's not the way. I told you to put her human characteristics on the left, her animal ones on the right, and don't forget to line them up." I commenced to walk backward. I didn't even look behind me to find out where I was headed. I just kept lifting my feet and pushing back. When I bumped up against a tree, my scalp was prickly. One of the dogs was licking out a pan in the yard. I got to the grape arbor fast enough, but I didn't have the muslin. Flies settled all over your face, rubbing their hands. My head itched like the devil, like somebody was sticking fine needles in my scalp. I never told Hallie or nobody, but that very day I asked Mrs. Garner a part of it. She was low then, not as low as she ended up, but failing. A kind of bag grew under her jaw. It didn't seem to hurt her, but it made her weak. First she'd be up and spry in the morning, and by the second milking, she couldn't stand up. Next, she took to sleeping late. The day I went up there, she was in bed the whole day. I thought to carry her some bean soup and ask her then. When I opened the bedroom door, she looked at me from underneath her nightcap. Already it was hard to catch life in her eyes. Her shoes and stockings were on the floor, so I knew she had tried to get dressed. "I brung you some bean soup," I said. She said, "I don't think I can swallow that." Try a bit, I told her. Too thick. I'm sure it's too thick. Want me to loosen it up with a little water? No, take it away. Bring me some cool water, that's all. Yes, ma'am. Ma'am, could I ask you something? What is it, Zetha? What do characteristics mean? What? A word. Characteristics? Oh. She moved her head around on the pillow. Features. Who taught you that? I heard the school teacher say it. Change the water, Setha. This is warm. Yes, ma'am. Features? Water, Setha. Cool water. I put the pitcher on the tray with the white bean soup and went downstairs. When I got back with the fresh water, I held her head while she drank. It took her a while because that lump made it hard to swallow. She laid back and wiped her mouth. The drinking seemed to satisfy her, but she frowned and said, I don't seem able to wake up, Setha. All I seem to want is sleep. Then do it, I told her. I'm take care of things. Then she went on. What about this? What about that? Said she knew Hallie was no trouble, but she wanted to know if school teacher was handling the Pauls all right. And 6-0. Yes, ma'am, I said. Look like it. Do they do what he tells them? They don't need telling. Good. That's a mercy. I should be back downstairs in a day or two. I just need more rest. Doctor's due back. Tomorrow, is it? You said features, ma'am. What? Features? Like a feature of summer is heat. Characteristic is a feature. A thing that's natural to a thing. Can you have more than one? You can have quite a few. You know, say a baby sucks its thumb. That's one, but it has others too. Keep Billy away from Red Cora. Mr. Garner never let her cab every other year. Setha, you hear me? Come away from that window and listen. Yes, ma'am. Ask my brother-in-law to come up after supper. Yes, ma'am. If you'd wash your hair, you could get rid of that lice. Ain't no lice in my head, ma'am. Whatever it is, a good scrubbing is what it needs, not scratching. Don't tell me we're out of soap. No, ma'am. All right now, I'm through. Talking makes me tired. Yes, ma'am. And thank you, Setha. Yes, ma'am. You was too little to remember the quarters. Your brothers slept under the window. Me, you, and your daddy slept by the wall. The night after I heard why school teacher measured me, I had trouble sleeping. When Hallie came in, I asked him what he thought about school teacher. He said there wasn't nothing to think about. Said, he's white, ain't he? I said, but I mean, is he like Mr. Garner? What you want to know, Setha? Him and her, I said. They ain't like the whites I seen before. The ones in the big place I was before I came here. How these different? He asked me. Well, I said, they talk soft, for one thing. It don't matter, Setha. What they say is the same, loud or soft. Mr. Garner let you buy out your mother, I said. Yep, he did. Well, if he hadn't have, she would have dropped in his cooking stove. Still, he did it. Let you work it off. Wake up, Hallie. I said, uh-huh. He could have said no. He didn't tell you no. No, he didn't tell me no. She worked here for 10 years. If she worked another 10, you think she would have made it out? I pay him for her last years. And in return, he got you? me and three more coming up. I got one more year of debt work, one more. School teacher in there told me to quit it. Said the reason for doing it don't hold. I should do the extra, but here at Sweet Home. Is he going to pay you for the extra? Nope. Then how are you going to pay it off? How much is it? $123.70. Does he want it back? He wants something. What? I don't know. Something. But he don't want me off Sweet Home no more. Say it don't pay to have my labor somewhere else while the boys is small. What about the money you owe? He must have another way of getting it. What way? I don't know, Setha. Then the only question is how. How is he going to get it? No, that's one question. There's one more. What's that? He leaned up and turned over, touching my cheek with his knuckles. The question now is, who's going to buy you out? Or me? Or her? He pointed over to where you was laying. What? If all my labor is Sweet Home, including the extra, what I got left to sell? He turned over then and went back to sleep. And I thought I wouldn't, but I did too for a while. Something he said, maybe, or something he didn't say woke me. I sat up like somebody hit me, and you woke up too and commenced to cry. I rocked you some, but there wasn't much room, so I stepped outside the door to walk you. Up and down I went, up and down. Everything dark but lamplight in the top window of the house. She must have been up still. I couldn't get out of my head the thing that woke me up. While the boys is small. That's what he said, and it snapped me awake. They tagged after me the whole day, weeding, milking, getting firewood. For now. For now. That's when we should have begun to plan, but we didn't. I don't know what we thought, but getting away was a money thing to us, buyout. Running was nowhere on our minds. All of us, some, where to, how to go. It was Sixo who brought it up finally. After Paul left, Miss Garner sold him, trying to keep things up. Already she lived 2 years off his price, but it ran out, I guess. So she wrote school teacher to come take over. 4 Sweet Home men, and she still believed she needed her brother-in-law and 2 boys, 'cause people said she shouldn't be alone out there with nothing but Negroes. So he came with a big hat and spectacles and a coach box full of paper, talking soft and watching hard. He beat Paul A. Not hard and not long, but it was the first time anyone had because Mr. Garner disallowed it. Next time I saw him, he had company in the prettiest trees you ever saw. Sixo started watching the sky. He was the only one who crept at night, and Hallie said that's how he learned about the train. That way, Hallie was pointing over the stable where he took my ma'am. Sixo say freedom is that way. A whole train is going, and if we can get there, don't need to be no buyout. Train? What's that? I asked him. They stopped talking in front of me then, even Hallie. But they whispered among themselves, and Sixo watched the sky. Not the high part, the low part, where it touched the trees. You could tell his mind was gone from Sweet Home. The plan was a good one, but when it came time, I was big with Denver. So we changed it a little. A little. Just enough to butter Hallie's face, so Paul D. tells me. And make Sixo laugh at last. But I got you out, baby, and the boys too. When the signal for the train come, you all was the only ones ready. I couldn't find Hallie or nobody. I didn't know Sixo was burned up and Paul D dressed in a collar you wouldn't believe. Not till later. So I sent you all to the wagon with a woman who waited in the corn. Ha ha. No notebook for my babies, and no measuring string neither. What I had to get through later, I got through because of you. Passed right by those boys, hanging in the trees. One had Paulie's shirt on, but not his feet or his head. I walked right on by, because only me had your milk. And God do what he would, I was going to get it to you. You remember that, don't you? That I did? That when I got here, I had milk enough for all? One more curve in the road, and Setha could see her chimney. It wasn't lonely looking anymore. The ribbon of smoke was from a fire that warmed a body, returned to her, just like it never went away, never needed a headstone. And the heart that beat inside it had not for a single moment stopped in her hands. She opened the door, walked in, and locked it tight behind her. The day stamp paid saw the two backs through the window and then hurried down the steps. He believed the undecipherable language clamoring around the house was the mumbling of the black and angry dead. Very few had died in bed like Baby Suggs, and none that he knew of, including Baby, had lived a livable life. Even the educated colored, the long school people, the doctors, the teachers, the paper writers, and businessmen had a hard row to hoe. In addition to having to use their heads to get ahead, they had the weight of the whole race sitting there. You needed two heads for that. White people believed that whatever the manners, under every dark skin was a jungle, swift, unnavigable waters, swinging, screaming baboons, sleeping snakes, red gums ready for their sweet white blood. In a way, he thought, they were right. The more colored people spent their strength trying to convince them how gentle they were, how clever and loving, how human, the more they used themselves up to persuade whites of something Negroes believed could not be questioned, the deeper and more tangled the jungle grew inside. But it wasn't the jungle blacks brought with them to this place from the other livable place. It was the jungle white folks planted in them. And it grew. It spread. In, through, and after life, it spread until it invaded the whites who had made it, touched them, everyone, changed and altered them, made them bloody, silly, worse than even they wanted to be, so scared were they of the jungle they had made. The screaming baboon lived under their own white skin. The red gums were their own. Meantime, the secret spread of this new kind of white folks' jungle was hidden, silent, except once in a while when you could hear its mumbling in places like 124. Stamp Paid abandoned his efforts to see about Setha after the pain of knocking and not gaining entrance, and when he did, 124 was left to its own devices. When Setha locked the door, the women inside were free at last to be what they liked, see whatever they saw, and say whatever was on their minds. Almost, mixed in with the voices surrounding the house, recognizable but undecipherable to Stamp Paid, were the thoughts of the women of 124. Unspeakable thoughts. Unspoken. Beloved, she my daughter, she mine. See, she come back to me of her own free will, and I don't have to explain a thing. I didn't have time to explain before because it had to be done quick, quick. She had to be safe, and I put her where she would be. But my love was tough, and she back now. I knew she would be. Paul D. ran her off, so she had no choice but to come back to me in the flesh. I bet you baby Suggs on the other side helped. I won't never let her go. I'll explain to her, even though I don't have to, why I did it, how if I hadn't killed her, she would have died, and that is something I could not bear to happen to her. When I explain it, she'll understand, because she understands everything already. I'll tend to her as no mother ever tended a child, a daughter. Nobody will ever get my milk no more, except my own children. I never had to give it to nobody else, and the one time I did, it was took from me. They held me down and took it. Milk that belonged to my baby. Nan had to nurse white babies, and me too, because Mam was in the rice. The little white babies got it first, and I got what was left, or none. There was no nursing milk to call my own. I know what it is to be without the milk that belongs to you, to have to fight and holler for it, and to have so little left. I'll tell Beloved about that. She'll understand. She my daughter, the one I managed to have milk for, and to get it to her even though they stole it, after they handled me like I was the cow, no, the goat, back behind the stable because it was too nasty to stay in with the horses. But I wasn't too nasty to cook their food or take care of Mrs. Garner. I tended her like I would have tended my own mother if she needed me, if they had let her out the rice field, because I was the one she didn't throw away. I couldn't have done more for that woman than I would my own ma'am if she was to take sick and need me, and I'd have stayed with her till she got well or died. And I would have stayed after that, except Nan snatched me back before I could check for the sign. It was her all right, but for a long time I didn't believe it. I looked everywhere for that hat, stuttered after that, didn't stop it till I saw Hallie. Oh, but that's all over now. I'm here. I lasted. And my girl come home. Now I can look at things again, because she's here to see them too. After the shed, I stopped. Now, in the morning, when I light the fire, I mean to look out the window, to see what the sun is doing to the day. Does it hit the pump handle first, or the spigot? See if the grass is gray-green or brown or what. Now I know why baby Suggs pounded color her last years. She never had time to see, let alone enjoy it before. Took her a long time to finish with blue, then yellow, then green. She was well into pink when she died. I don't believe she wanted to get to red. And I understand why, because me and Beloved outdid ourselves with it. Matter of fact, that and her pinkish headstone was the last color I recall. Now I'll be on the lookout. Think what spring will be for us. I'll plant carrots, just so she can see them. And turnips. Have you ever seen one, baby? A prettier thing God never made. White and purple with a tender tail and a hard head. Feels good when you hold it in your hand, and smells like the creek when it floods, bitter but happy. We'll smell them together, Beloved. Beloved, because you're mine, and I have to show you these things and teach you what a mother should. Funny how you lose sight of some things and memory others. I never will forget that white girl's hands, Amy. But I forget the color of all that hair on her head. Eyes must have been gray, though. Seemed like I do remember that. Mrs. Gardner's was light brown while she was well, got dark when she took sick. A strong woman used to be, and when she talked off her head, she'd say it. I used to be strong as a mule, Jenny. Call me Jenny when she was babbling, and I can bear witness to that, tall and strong. The two of us on a cord of wood was as good as two men. Hurt her like the devil not to be able to raise her head off the pillow. Still can't figure why she thought she needed school teacher, though. I wonder if she lasted, like I did. Last time I saw her, she couldn't do nothing but cry, and I couldn't do a thing for her but wipe her face when I told her what they'd done to me. Somebody had to know it, hear it, somebody. Maybe she lasted. School teacher wouldn't treat her the way he treated me. First beating I took was the last. Nobody gonna keep me from my children. Hadn't been for me taking care of her, maybe I would have known what happened. Maybe Hallie was trying to get to me. I stood by her bed, waiting for her to finish with the slop jar. When I got her back in the bed, she said she was cold, hot as blazes, and she wanted quilts. Said to shut the window. I told her no. She needed the cover, I needed the breeze. Long as those yellow curtains flapped, I was all right. Should have heeded her. Maybe what sounded like shots really was. Maybe I would have seen somebody or something. Maybe. Anyhow, I took my babies to the corn, Hallie or no. Jesus. When I heard that woman's rattle, she said, any more? I told her I didn't know. She said, I've been here all night, can't wait. I tried to make her. She said, can't do it, come on. Who? Not a man around. Boys scared. You sleep on my back, Denver, sleep in my stomach. Felt like I was split in two. I told her to take you all. I had to go back, in case. She just looked at me, said, woman, bit a piece of my tongue off when they opened my back. It was hanging by a shred. I didn't mean to. Clamped down on it. It come right off. I thought, good God, I'm going to eat myself up. They dug a hole for my stomach so as not to hurt the baby. Denver don't like for me to talk about it. She hates anything about Sweet Home except how she was born. But you was there, and even if you're too young to memory it, I can tell it to you. The grape arbor. You memory that? I ran so fast. Flies beat me to you. I would have known right away who you was when the sun blotted out your face the way it did when I took you to the grape arbor. I would have known at once when my water broke, the minute I saw you sitting on the stump it broke. And when I did see your face, it had more than a hint of what you would look like after all these years. I would have known who you were right away, because the cup after cup of water you drank proved and connected to the fact that you dribbled clear spit on my face the day I got to 124. I would have known right off, but Paul D. distracted me. Otherwise, I would have seen my fingernail prints right there on your forehead for all the world to see. From when I held your head up out in the shed, and later on, when you asked me about the earrings I used to dangle for you to play with, I would have recognized you right off. Except for Paul D. Seems to me he wanted you out from the beginning, but I wouldn't let him. What you think? And look how he ran when he found out about me and you in the shed. Too rough for him to listen to. Too thick, he said. My love was too thick. What he know about it? Who in the world is he willing to die for? Would he give his privates to a stranger in return for a carving? Some other way, he said. There must have been some other way. Let school teacher haul us away, I guess, to measure your behind before he tore it up. I have felt what it felt like, and nobody, walking or stretched out, is going to make you feel it too. Not you, not none of mine. And when I tell you you mine, I also mean I'm yours. I wouldn't draw breath without my children. I told Baby Suggs that, and she got down on her knees to beg God's pardon for me. Still, it's so. My plan was to take us all to the other side, where my own ma'am is. They stopped me from getting us there, but they didn't stop you from getting here. Ha ha! You came right on back, like a good girl, like a daughter, which is what I wanted to be, and would have been if my ma'am had been able to get out of the rice long enough before they hanged her and let me be one. You know what? She had the bit so many times she smiled. When she wasn't smiling, she smiled. And I never saw her own smile. I wonder what they was doing when they was caught. Running, you think? No, not that. Because she was my ma'am, and nobody's ma'am would run off and leave her daughter, would she? Would she now leave her in the yard with a one-armed woman, even if she hadn't been able to suckle the daughter for more than a week or two and had to turn her over to another woman's tit that never had enough for all? They said it was the bit that made her smile when she didn't want to. Like the Saturday girls working the slaughterhouse yard. When I came out of jail, I saw them plain. They came when the shift changed, on Saturday when the men got paid, and worked behind the fences, back of the outhouse. Some worked standing up, leaning on the toolhouse door. They gave some of their nickels and dimes to the foreman as they left. But by then, their smiles was over. Some of them drank liquor to keep from feeling what they felt. Some didn't drink a drop, just beat it on over to Phelps to pay for what their children needed or their mammies. Work in a pig yard, that has got to be something for a woman to do. And I got close to it myself when I got out of jail and bought, so to speak, your name. But the Bodwins got me the cooking job at Sawyer's and left me able to smile on my own, like now, when I think about you. But you know all that, because you're smart, like everybody said. Because when I got here, you was crawling already, trying to get up the stairs. Baby Suggs had them painted white, so you could see your way to the top in the dark, where the lamplight didn't reach. Lord, you loved the stair steps. I got close to being a Saturday girl. I had already worked a stonemason's shop. A step to the slaughterhouse would have been a short one. When I put that headstone up, I wanted to lay in there with you, put your head on my shoulder, and keep you warm. And I would have, if Bugler and Howard and Denver didn't need me, because my mind was homeless then. I couldn't lay down with you then. No matter how much I wanted to, I couldn't lay down nowhere in peace back then. Now I can. I can sleep like the drowned. Have mercy. She come back to me. My daughter. And she is mine. Beloved is my sister. I swallowed her blood right along with my mother's milk. The first thing I heard, after not hearing anything, was the sound of her crawling up the stairs. She was my secret company until Paul D. came. He threw her out. Ever since I was little, she was my company, and she helped me wait for my daddy. Me and her waited for him. I love my mother. but I know she killed one of her own daughters. And tender as she is with me, I'm scared of her because of it. She missed killing my brothers, and they knew it. They told me Die Witch stories to show me the way to do it if I ever needed to. Maybe it was getting that close to dying made them want to fight the war. That's what they told me they were going to do. I guess they'd rather be around killing men than killing women. And there sure is something in her that makes it all right to kill her own. All the time, I'm afraid. The thing that happened that made it all right for my mother to kill my sister could happen again. I don't know what it is. I don't know who it is. But maybe there is something else terrible enough to make her do it again. I need to know what that thing might be, but I don't want to. Whatever it is, it comes from outside this house, outside the yard, and it can come right on in the yard if it wants to. So I never leave this house, and I watch over the yard, so it can't happen again, and my mother won't have to kill me, too. Not since Miss Lady Jones's house have I left 124 by myself. Never. The only other times, two times in all, I was with my mother. Once to see Grandma Baby put down next to Beloved. She's my sister. The other time, Paul D. went too. And when we came back, I thought the house would still be empty from when he threw my sister's ghost out. But no. When I came back to 124, there she was, Beloved, waiting for me, tired from her long journey back, ready to be taken care of, ready for me to protect her. This time, I have to keep my mother away from her. That's hard, but I have to. It's all on me. I've seen my mother in a dark place with scratching noises, a smell coming from her dress. I've been with her where something little watched us from the corners and touched. Sometimes they touched. I didn't remember it for a long time until Nelson Lord made me. I asked her if it was true, but couldn't hear what she said. And there was no point in going back to Lady Jones if you couldn't hear what anybody said. So quiet made me have to read faces and learn how to figure out what people were thinking, so I didn't need to hear what they said. That's how come me and Beloved could play together, not talking, on the porch, by the creek, in the secret house. It's all on me now. But she can count on me. I thought she was trying to kill her that day in the clearing, kill her back. But then she kissed her neck, and I have to warn her about that. Don't love her too much. Don't. Maybe it's still in her, the thing that makes it all right to kill her children. I have to tell her. I have to protect her. She cut my head off every night. Bugler and Howard told me she would, and she did, her pretty eyes looking at me like I was a stranger. Not mean or anything, but like I was somebody she found and felt sorry for. Like she didn't want to do it, but she had to, and it wasn't going to hurt. That it was just a thing grown-up people do, like pull a splinter out your hand, touch the corner of a towel in your eye if you get a cinder in it. She looks over at Bugler and Howard, see if they're all right. Then she comes over to my side. I know she'll be good at it, careful, that when she cuts it off, it'll be done right. It won't hurt. And after she does it, I lie there for a minute, with just my head. Then she carries it downstairs to braid my hair. I try not to cry, but it hurts so much to comb it. When she finishes the combing and starts the braiding, I get sleepy. I want to go to sleep, but I know if I do, I won't wake up. So I have to stay awake while she finishes my hair. Then I can sleep. The scary part is waiting for her to come in and do it. Not when she does it, but when I wait for her to. Only place she can't get to me in the night is Grandma Baby's room. The room we sleep in upstairs used to be where the help slept when white people lived here. They had a kitchen outside, too, but Grandma Baby turned it into a woodshed and tool room when she moved in. And she boarded up the back door that led to it, because she said she didn't want to make that journey no more. She built around it to make a storeroom, so if you want to get in 124, you have to come by her. Said she didn't care what folks said about her fixing a two-story house up like a cabin where you cook inside. She said they told her visitors with nice dresses don't want to sit in the same room with the cook stove and the peelings and the grease and the smoke. She wouldn't pay them no mind, she said. I was safe at night in there with her. All I could hear was me breathing. But sometimes in the day, I couldn't tell whether it was me breathing or somebody next to me. I used to watch her boy's stomach go in and out, to see if it matched mine, holding my breath to get off his rhythm, releasing it to get on, just to see whose it was. A sound like when you blow soft in a bottle, only regular, regular. Am I making that sound? Is Howard? Who is? That was when everybody was quiet, and I couldn't hear anything they said. I didn't care either, because the quiet let me dream my daddy better. I always knew he was coming. Something was holding him up. He had a problem with the horse. The river flooded. The boat sank, and he had to make a new one. Sometimes it was a lynch mob or a windstorm. He was coming, and it was a secret. I spent all of my outside self loving Ma'am so she wouldn't kill me, loving her even when she braided my head at night. I never let her know my daddy was coming for me. Grandma Baby thought he was coming, too. For a while she thought so. Then she stopped. I never did, even when Bugler and Howard ran away. Then Paul D. came in here. I heard his voice downstairs and Ma'am laughing, so I thought it was him, my daddy. Nobody comes to this house anymore. But when I got downstairs, it was Paul D., and he didn't come for me. He wanted my mother at first. Then he wanted my sister, too. But she got him out of here, and I'm so glad he's gone. Now it's just us, and I can protect her till my daddy gets here to help me watch out for Ma'am and anything come in the yard. My daddy do anything for runny fried eggs, dip his bread in it. Grandma used to tell me his things. She said any time she could make him a plate of soft fried eggs was Christmas made him so happy. She said she was always a little scared of my daddy. He was too good, she said. From the beginning, she said he was too good for the world. Scared her. She thought he'll never make it through nothing. White people must have thought so, too, because they never got split up. So she got the chance to know him, look after him, and he scared her the way he loved things. Animals and tools and crops and the alphabet. He could count on paper. The boss taught him. Offered to teach the other boys, but only my daddy wanted it. She said the other boys said no. One of them, with a number for a name, said it would change his mind. Made him forget things he shouldn't and memorize things he shouldn't. And he didn't want his mind messed up. But my daddy said, if you can't count, they can cheat you. If you can't read, they can beat you. They thought that was funny. Grandma said she didn't know, but it was because my daddy could count on paper and figure that he bought her away from there. And she said she always wished she could read the Bible like real preachers. So it was good for me to learn how, and I did, until it got quiet, and all I could hear was my own breathing and one other who knocked over the milk jug while it was sitting on the table. Nobody near it. Ma'am whipped Bugler, but he didn't touch it. Then it messed up all the iron clothes and put its hands in the cake. Looked like I was the only one knew right away who it was. Just like when she came back, I knew who she was, too. Not right away, but soon as she spelled her name, not her given name, but the one ma'am paid the stonecutter for, I knew. And when she wondered about ma'am's earrings, something I didn't know about, well, that just made the cheese more binding. My sister come to help me wait for my daddy.